Let's bring in our next guest, staff writer at The Ringer, covering the NFL. It is Benjamin Solak. Thanks for this, Ben. How are you?
I'm well, guys. How y'all been?
We're doing really well. Thanks for making the time today. How did you like the Manning Bros on the Monday Night Football broadcast?
That Monday Night Football game started out so sleepy, and then it just got weirder and weirder, and we got overtime, and overtime was weird. They couldn't have asked for a better game for those Manning brothers to debut on. At the top, you're kind of expecting it to be like, oh, they're going to be heavy on scheme, and they're kind of just being silly and then, you know, telling stories and having a good time watching the game. You're like, oh, this doesn't really make too much sense. And then once the game got interesting, that's when the broadcast got really funny. It's always enjoyable to see even ex-NFL players unfettered consuming a football game and just reacting to it live. The Peyton reaction to the Derek Carr interception in the end zone was priceless. And so I really enjoyed it. I think they'll keep doing it. I don't think it would work too well with other players. I think it's got to be brothers like that who know how to riff on each other a little bit, but it was a lot of fun.
We really enjoyed watching it. It was a lot of fun seeing it, and that game was just magnificent. Maybe we'll see if we see a better Monday night game, and it was really stupid in so many ways, which I love when it comes to football anyways. But what was your main takeaway from both these teams coming away from that week one win? Because I mean, the Ravens showed some solid play, but also some of the issues we thought they would have, especially on defense in that secondary with some injuries. Like, did you feel better or worse about either team after the game last night?
I certainly feel better about the Raiders, who that first half, Derek Carr just funneling targets to Darren Waller, unable to hit him accurately. Pass protection wasn't holding up too well. You were worried it was just kind of going to be much of the same, a redux for the Raiders. But they really settled it in the second half. They found a little bit better of a target distribution, found a way to keep some bodies in for pass protection by Derek Carr, some extra time. And then Carr can hit throws. He was uncharacteristically inaccurate in the first half, and I thought he settled it nicely in the second half. So I feel a little better about the Raiders and that offense. For the Ravens, Lamar Jackson rarely fumbles twice a game. You know what I mean? He obviously moves around a lot, and he's pretty crazy, and he can hold the football loose, but he tends to have a very good sense for protecting the football. Had just two critical fumbles last night, and that's really what ended up losing them the game. I think that you are, as you said, worried about the way that the injuries are going to affect the secondary. Don Wink Martindale is the defensive coordinator for the Ravens. And every single year, the Ravens lead the league in blitz percentage. They don't give a hoot. They're going to send bodies. You wondered, okay, would losing your corner two, would losing Marcus Peters and not having his primary backup in Jimmy Smith, would this in any way take the edge off of Martindale? Would he keep more bodies in pass coverage to help out his young cornerback room? And the answer was resoundingly no. He just blitzed it a ton and asked the depth pieces, asked the fourth corner and the fifth corner to stick in man coverage. And, you know, we saw a lot of big plays for the Raiders come when the Ravens did have a free blitzer. They had a free rusher, but you weren't able to stick in coverage long enough to make that free rusher impactful. So I do hope that the Ravens are willing to change their philosophy on defense a little bit to account for the injury to Marcus Peters. Once Jimmy Smith gets back, it'll be a little easier. But you do want to see a little bit of a philosophical change for a team that's dealing with major injury.
Yeah, that was a big loss for the Ravens. And in the AFC North, you know, there were some surprise developments. Obviously, the Browns lose, but they showed pretty well in that game for the majority of it. The Steelers really turned back the clock beyond last year and showed that they're a good defensive team and they can put up points. When you look at that division, did this loss from the Ravens kind of, are you reassessing how you look at these teams? Is the Ravens ceiling still very high based on what you've seen from the other two teams?
Yeah, I still think the Ravens are. They came into the season with roughly the same odds to win the AFC North as the Browns, with the Steelers as a clear third, but still obviously the third above the Bengals. I still think the Ravens are right there with the Browns. Dropping an interconference game that they should have won hurts, but the Ravens controlled this game for the majority of the game. And we brought up, of course, Marcus Peters after the season, Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins after the season. But they do get guys like Jimmy Smith and Rashad Bateman back. And those are important players for them who do have timelines that will return them for the season. So I think the Ravens are still right there with the Browns at the top of the AFC North. Certainly you like what the Steelers did. The Steelers look like they have a better chance to hang with some top offenses. They certainly did in week one against the Bills. With that said, it's worth remarking, the Steelers scored 23 points in that game. 7 of them came off of a blocked punt. This offense was still really, really rough. Roethlisberger, another year removed from elbow surgery, still looks like he's lacking arm strength. I'm not sold that this offense can hang for 17 games against a really talented AFC field. And so well, I'm impressed the Steelers beat a contender. I'm not sure that model will allow them to beat all the contenders they're going to face, certainly the four games they have against the Ravens and the Browns in their division. So to me, it's still Ravens and Browns at the top, Steelers at third, but absolutely a big week for the Browns, big week for the Steelers.
I do wonder with the Steelers because, you know, the arm strength of Roethlisberger definitely did not provide any sort of optimism about this offense getting progressively better as the season goes on. But the offensive line was terrible as well, Ben. And if they're going to, you know, pound the rock as they would like to do and get back to traditional Steelers football with Najee Harris, their first round pick, I don't see how they're going to do that with that the way that offensive line looked in week one.
Yeah, real problems at the tackle positions. I like what they got for their fourth round pick, the center Kendrick Green out of Illinois. He's starting for them and he looks fairly good. But Chukwuma Okorafor on the right has been a backup for them for a while. There's a reason why. And then they're starting a fifth-round rookie, Dan Moore, out of Texas A&M at left tackle, and he got waxed more than a few times. So they're weak at the edge spots, right? And Roethlisberger gets rid of the ball quickly enough that he can negate some edge pressure. You really can't get to him fast enough. But that's why the depth of target is so low for the Steelers passing game, right? They're just throwing lollipop jump balls to Chase Claypool 20 yards down the field, and that's the entirety of their vertical passing game. So that's why they're just not accessing enough of the field that you can really believe in that passing game. Najee Harris, as you said, their first-round draft pick, they need him to be good. He took 100% of the Steelers' offensive snaps. Unheard of. Running backs don't do that anymore. So not only are they going to struggle maybe to run the football behind that line, it really seems like they're going to start wearing down Harris's tires quick. And so for a player coming out of a college season where they play 12, 13, and, you know, in the case of Alabama, 14 games because of how many games they're winning and how they're doing in the playoffs, transitioning to NFL speed, NFL contact, and adding another month of the season onto your body, I'm worried about Harris's ability to hold up under that usage throughout the season. So even if the Steelers are pushing for the playoffs, and it is behind Najee Harris, he may not be as effective in December as he is in September.
I'm Benjamin Solak. The Ringer is our guest here on the People Show on Sportsnet 650. And Ben, I'm a big Cleveland Browns fan, but I find myself having a soft spot for the LA Chargers. Maybe it's because of the uniforms, and also every single year they have so much talent, but things always fall apart for them. Now they seem to have some health. Derwin James is back. Justin Herbert looks really good. They go into Washington and they beat the Washington football team, which I don't think that was an easy victory in week one on the road. Has the tide turned for the Chargers, or am I getting ahead of myself too early in the season here?
Room for the Browns and the Chargers. Well, I don't know why you hate yourself so much, but it was a big win for the Chargers in week one, I agree. That was a game I thought they'd drop, just because I thought Washington had enough juice and in a stellar pass rush, a stellar front four, that they would be able to pressure Justin Herbert enough to keep that passing game under clamps. The performance of the Chargers' offensive line in week one is just delightful news. It's extremely exciting. Rashawn Slater for a rookie left tackle going against Chase Young and Montez Sweat, just obnoxiously successful. He's going to be key for them. If they can keep Brian Bulaga healthy, then they're going to have the protection they need to get the job done. Herbert was unbelievable passing on third downs, which tends to be an area in which there can be some regression to the mean. It's very hard for third down performance to be sticky game over game, week over week, year over year. But with that said, you saw good designs from offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi, who knew what tendencies to go after in that Jack Del Rio defense. And then Herbert is just something else. I mean, he can really sling it. His arm strength solves a lot of problems. Defenses think they have a win on a rep, and then Herbert's just able to muscle a ball in there. He's got good pass catchers, too. So I'm buying. I'm certainly buying on that Chargers offense. I do think that this was one of the lighter offensive tests they'll get, especially because of the quarterback injury midway through the game for Washington. Ryan Fitzpatrick out, Taylor Heinicke in. And that defense, Brandon Staley, first-year head coach, not the same level of talent he had with the Rams. He did a lot of good stuff X's and O's wise, but there are bigger weaknesses on this defense that are going to be tougher to cover up. So I am excited to see the defense grow across the course of the year. And if the Chargers are going to be legit in the playoffs, that defense will have to improve from week one to week 18.
Well, another positive story in week one was the Cardinals, but I want to focus on the negative here. The Titans, the team that they played and beat rather resoundingly, they did not look good. They were out of sorts. What did you make of their week one effort? And it felt like they were just, you know, a bunch of multiple pieces. They didn't really, that team game, you didn't really see it so much. It felt like they were still trying to catch up with their preseason.
Yeah, they got a new offensive coordinator there in Tennessee, Todd Downing, and he had a year with the Raiders, wasn't too great. He's been in the Titans building for the past couple of years now. And when this Titans offense took off, it was the first year under Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator there. He was there 2019 and 2020. Ryan Tannehill experienced a career resurgence, unbelievable productivity, incredible downfield passing numbers, EPA per play through the roof. Derrick Henry, who was like a decent running back at a decent volume, all of a sudden got the most carries of any running back in the league and became one of the most efficient running backs, boom, overnight. It was incredible what Arthur Smith did for the pieces on this offense that were good, but weren't even necessarily that great. Corey Davis, the wide receiver, another one who really ascended under Arthur Smith. So once you take that skeleton key away, once you take away the straw that stirs the drink in Arthur Smith, there's expected chaos. There's expected regression, expected confusion. And that goes to the point that you're saying a lot of multiple pieces. They have, oh, Julio's here. A.J. Brown's back. You know what I mean? We're going to be great. Well, it doesn't look the same. They're not running the same stuff. You lose Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis. It's a lot harder to run heavy personnel, two tight end sets. Corey Davis was a great blocker for them on the inside. Now it becomes a lot harder to chip good edge rushers. Chandler Jones may have gotten a few sacks against Taylor Lewan because there was nobody there to help Taylor Lewan. So a lot of the little stuff, the little edges afforded them by Arthur Smith, who's now departed to be the head coach of the Falcons, they lost those under Todd Downing. And Downing needs to find answers to those problems, some of those weak talent points that Smith was just oh so good at covering up. So I very much agree. On offense, I think they're in for a big step back throughout the year. Regression just makes sense for that model. And then on defense, they haven't been good for years, and they didn't add really any significant pieces. They want Janoris Jenkins to be the Janoris Jenkins of 5 years ago. Caleb Farley was a good swing at the plate, their first-round corner draft pick, but he's got a bad back. He's not playing at 100%. Bud Dupree is a fine edge rusher, but they're paying him $18 million. I'm not sure he's that good. They don't have the horses on defense to compete. This offense needs to be able to eat clock with Derrick Henry and score 25-plus in order to win. They don't have that unit. I think they're going to struggle a lot this year.
Benjamin, before we let you go, I've really enjoyed you on the Ringer NFL show with Kevin Clark and Nora Princiotti, especially the last couple episodes. And I just have one question. Your mom seemed really concerned about the betting stuff that you're doing. Is she still very worried about that?
She's going to be worried regardless. If I have a good week, my folks get worried because I think it means I'm going to keep betting. And if I have a bad week, my folks get worried because I think I'm destitute. So you really can't win either way. Hopefully she'll keep listening and enjoy the show. As long as I get the listeners, as long as I get the stream, I'm still coming out on top.
That's awesome. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak and check out his work at The Ringer and hear him on The Ringer NFL Show, wherever you get your favorite podcast. Thanks for this, Ben. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me on. Y'all take care up there.